Welcome to Rewatchable episode 59, where we're rewatching Pushing Daisies. Tonight we're going to talk about episode 5, Dim Sum Lose Sum, and episode 6, It's Magic. As always, you can reach us by email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Talk to us on Twitter at re_watchable, and this post will be available on hypable.com. This week, we are joined by your host, me, Brittany, and we have Mitch, and we have Christine. Hi, everybody.
Hey.
You guys just missed an awesome conversation about all sorts of things, from Justin Bieber. I think he had pretty much announced that he was like, no, I'm joking, he didn't announce he's part of the KKK. But is there like a parody video out for that or something? Like he parodied Baby with it?
Well, he's still in that like little thing that you pointed out, like that video clip with just the still. He had like his like long hair, like from when he, you know, was still working with trying to win over Usher. So
we'll let everyone know this is like a time and place, you know, kind of putting everyone in Rewatchable listening to this episode like 50 years from now. The number one Facebook trend is Justin Bieber : Justin Bieber sings about killing black people joining KKK. How fabulous.
Yeah, great
sign of the wonderful times we live in, huh?
Great world we're living in right now. If that, well, first of all, that many people are talking about it, that it is the top Facebook trend.
I know, it's strange. But you know what? That's why I'm happy we're here to do something really cool by talking about Pushing Daisies in its own little world. And it does feel pretty timeless whenever I watch the show. It doesn't feel like I'm watching that show from like 2009 or whenever it was made, you know?
It does, especially with like the mixing of like what I want to talk about tonight with costumes and the cars and
noir.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of noir, especially with Emerson and stuff too. So that's why, yeah, I agree that this show really does a good job of feeling like it can be in any given time, not just when Justin Bieber's relevant for his last 15 minutes of fame.
Well, let's get into episode 5, where we discover that there is a Chinatown wherever Ned lives. So the episode is called Dim Sum, Lose Sum, and the synopsis is, in this episode of Pushing Daisies, an exploding pork bun steamer has been killing employees at a local dim sum restaurant. It's another case all about food when Ned realizes that the restaurant is running a gambling ring using edibles instead of cards. Emerson meets up with his lady love, Simone, and they get it on in front of her dog. Dwight Dixon, an old friend of Ned's father, stops by the pie hole and starts asking all sorts of questions that make Ned uncomfortable. This leads Chuck and Olive to do some digging into Ned's life, only to discover that Ned has twin half-brothers who have the same eyebrows as Ned. So, what are our thoughts on this case? Especially with the way that the first victim is claimed, and the second victim, I guess, but the first one's a little bit more memorable.
Well, it's a very, very odd way to die, although a lot of the times the way they die in the show is strange, so I guess that's nothing special, right? Like death by being shoved into a snowman?
Oh, that is true.
I just like, I had put this down in the doc, just how did the killer ensuring that this is like going to kill the right person?
Yeah. I feel like this is another one of our science issues with the show.
Yeah.
I don't even call this science. I just call this, like, continuity. It's just like, oh, yeah, well, you just assume that what's meant to happen will happen and whatever else. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't realize that until you guys mentioned that, though. That's a bit upsetting.
Yeah, because it's one of those things for this, because, like, I like that they kind of go out of the box with, like, how people die and stuff. But at the same time, there just, like, needs to be some sort of, like, believability to it. I'm just like, that just doesn't make sense, like, at all. Yeah,
you can't especially even when, like, when Emerson was like staring down the second pipe and like just like kind of like did one of those little like head shimmies to the side and like dodged
it. Oh, he did the Matrix. He totally, yeah, like he Neo'd his way out of that bullet. It was pretty cool. I feel like Emerson does have like these like secret kung fu moves that we don't know about, you know? Because like we think about how like, he was fighting his mother when she was in his office. And he just like, didn't he like throw something at her head and like tackled her to the wall or something?
Yeah, that was like brute force though. That wasn't very graceful. But I do feel
like
ninja
has many forms of fighting, young Brittany San.
I don't know. I think that he sort of just goes with whatever the episode calls for him to do, which in this case, living above the dim sum restaurant, he is now a ninja.
But you know, I did always notice the little dog neon sign before this episode whenever they go to Emerson's office. So I'm glad that we finally got to see some continuity there with seeing where that dog's, you know, neon sign led to. So I have a question then. Does that dog relate to anything in this episode? I mean, other than like bubblegum, for instance, that comes up, but does that relate to the restaurant itself? Like, I don't, what was the significance of that dog on their neon sign?
Well, that's a good question. I didn't give that any thought, mainly because I was distracted by the food again.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But we'll get to that, we'll get to that. But that's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know, because I thought it would have some significance to, like, why they need the restaurant that or something. I don't know. I mean, call me crazy, but it could just be something as simple as saying, like, this was a Chinese restaurant, right? And then there are different animals that you can be represented by, depending on your birth year, if you're following the Chinese zodiac.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
And the dog is one, so it might, if you looked, we looked into that, it might, like, relate to the characters in this episode specifically had characteristics of that zodiac sign.
That's a good theory. I'm thinking of the horse.
I think I'm the monkey. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea what I am. I'm trying to read up on this dog thing.
Yeah. But I mean, then again, I mean, if this was all meant to be all about Simone's coming back and, you know, that being bubblegum foreshadowed way back when, like episode one of this show, then that's pretty cool. Either way, I think that it was pretty unique and that it's a fun little detail that you might have missed out if you were as eagle-eyed as Private Eye Mitchell Clow.
I feel like it is pretty related, though, because what I'm reading is that some of their strengths are that they're faithful, courageous, smart, and warm-hearted. It really depends on who you want to apply it to. In my head, I'm instinctively applying it to Ned, which, even though he's not the focus of this, that's just where my head goes when we're talking Pushing Daisies.
Well, let's think of like, the characters we were introduced to in this episode. There was...
Oh, like the gambling ring?
There was the gambling ring, there was the mother, there was the daughter, there was the cousin who owned the restaurant. I mean, do any of them seem to fit that? I don't know. None of them seem to be like... strong and courageous at all. Ned does, I agree. Is this supposed to represent Emerson? Is Emerson just that kind of character?
I would say that actually most of the main characters kind of have a lot of those traits.
Yeah, because they do like to, like, you know, stick by their own.
Yeah, and one of their strengths is they know how to keep secrets and inspire other people's confidence.
Oh, know how to keep secrets.
Ooh.
That really is very
strange. Oh, and a weakness is they are irritable and usually bothered by unwarranted anxiety. I don't think we've ever met a character that has unwarranted anxiety.
Yes, and these are just antacids.
Oh, all right. Anyway, enough of Chinese zodiac symbols. But that was a good point. I didn't even think about the dog.
Yeah, it was
going to
look out. You don't know.
Yeah,
it's coming from my English major brain. It's like every, like, it's the classic example of the red curtains are red to represent the character's inner loneliness and lust for love. And what's really meant to not be anything at all.
It's just, it went with the decor of
the
chairs
decor,
they ordered or something.
Yeah.
But I was really hungry watching this. I really wanted Chinese food. Like, the whole time, I was like, I would really love a dumpling right now.
I didn't recognize most of the foods they were eating, so I don't really eat Chinese food too often. It's not one of my favorite foods. Types of food,
it is definitely, like, top three favorite foods underneath, like, pizza.
It's pretty complicated that they were able to, like, memorize which suit and number each, in color, each food was representing. Like, red or black, suit and number. That's a
And I
lot.
feel like there weren't enough. Do you know what
No.
I mean? Like, there definitely were not enough.
Like what, 42, isn't it? 42 cards in
Yeah,
the deck. So
or
like
52.
52?
52.
There weren't 52 items of food on that table. There were probably like 35 max.
Yeah,
It
it's
doesn't make
probably like
sense. And like even Emerson didn't know what he's doing when he won, so he was
I
like,
was
oh
pretty
yeah.
excited for him. I was like,
Yeah.
hey, look, he must have gotten a whole bunch of money right there. Just keep on the afro and you're good.
Oh, and when they ripped off the afro and he still had like the sideburns on his
I
face.
know. That was cute. Because he's just completely bald.
Yeah, but speaking of Emerson and some drastic changes besides his hair this episode, he has a lovely lady come back into his life.
Lovely lady.
Simone.
You were making me sing of Les Mis. You know that, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Now it just got in my head. All of a sudden, I'm like, lovely. Oh, yeah.
I want to point out that I don't think I've ever listened to any kind of hypeable podcast without Les Mis being brought up.
Really?
I feel like it's so common in so many podcasts.
That's funny. It's like that in Harry Potter.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I never would have thought Les Mis, of all things. I mean, it relates to all of our fandoms that we cover, like Batman for like Anne Hathaway and, like Hugh Jackman and X-Men, and it goes on and on from there. That's probably why they did that. So, anyways,
Simone.
the lovely lady Simone. Yeah.
I love her.
She was cool. Did you guys expect her to come back? Because I had like a we had lingering thoughts in the episode of Rewatchable. I don't know who I was on there with, but like with her dog episode, it really felt like they left it open for, some loving later on, and it happened.
Well, I mean, I
Yeah.
knew she was coming back.
Well, of course you did. I
So
hope you were by this point.
you
you
two
two
she was.
discussed.
I was hoping she was, but I was like, every time I think of something, I just keep in the back of my mind, like, oh, there's only 13 episodes. Like, it's gonna end soon. So I'm happy that she was back before. And I'm kind of like, I hope she's kind of back every episode.
Yes, and you know what? Unfortunately, I have a spoiler that I'm not going to reveal to anyone who hasn't watched it, and to obviously you, Christine. Brittany wouldn't know what I'm talking about because I was watching like a playlist of Kristen Chenoweth videos, and of course they threw in some Pushy Daisies ones, and she's going. Well, this isn't a spoiler to say she sings more, but there is one song that she's singing where another character reappears that whoever was on the episode of Rewatchable with me also agreed that they would. So. What I'm long story short saying, Christine, is that I'm glad that you're thinking that about Simone because I feel that you're also going to be thinking in the right mindset when it comes to the next character that's going to come back. That was like a
Oh,
minor
really?
character.
I'm excited.
Brittany, do you know who I'm talking about?
I do. I know exactly who you're talking
And
about.
I saw like maybe a millisecond of it because I skipped the video as soon as it came up on YouTube. I was really upset,
Oh,
but
I'm
wait.
jealous you guys know and I don't know.
Well, get excited. No, Christine, get excited. It's a really cool character to come back for what I think they're doing from the brief glimpse I saw of them.
Oh, good. I'm so jealous. I need
Yeah,
to know.
it's gonna be cool. It's gonna be cool. So yeah, I'm liking that Pushing Daisies brought back Simone and said character to come. It's fun, and that's my favorite kind of continuity in any given show when my side characters come back. It's so cool.
Me too. And that's what I feel like they just need more of. Because,
Yeah.
like, that's what gets me excited. I'm like, seeing her, like, Simone back, I was like, oh, yay. Like, that makes me really happy.
I want to see like the revenge of the fire-breathing horse mom.
Oh my gosh. I do not.
I
I want her to like.
remember discussing that episode, and, like, everyone on that episode was sort of just like, I cannot believe they brought a horse in the house. Like, that was, like, everyone's biggest complaint with that
It's
whole
crashing
thing.
through the walls and stuff. I'm like, what?
Yeah, was that the horse was in the house and how, like, not nice that was for the horse.
Oh, that's funny.
I liked this point on here. After meeting Emerson's mother, do we see any similarities between her and Simone? And I would like to say no, because I don't see any similarities between her and Simone, except for maybe that Emerson is equally, like, infatuated with pleasing them and making sure that they know, like, he doesn't keep secrets from anyone. And as we will see in the next episode, he doesn't like illusions, or he likes to find out the truth and everything. But aside from that, I feel like Simone has this grip over him that I don't think his mother ever would, mainly because they were partners. And here he's being dominated.
I know, but it seems like he likes it. This definitely feels like a BDSM
Oh,
relationship.
yeah, he definitely likes
Oh,
it.
yeah, I am not saying he doesn't enjoy it. This is his type of woman.
This is probably like one step away from 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah. Well, he had
come here, or no, like literally when she goes, it was like Emerson had never been told the thing that he'd been told right in this moment, says Jim Dale. She clicks her thing and says, come. I'm like, oh my God, pushing daisies, calm down.
I know.
I was like, oh my God.
That was very, very way past their TV-14 rating, if they're there. I think they're Y7.
Yeah, I was a little like, whoa.
I know. Yeah, very off-color for a family show like this. I mean, we say that, but like they have, you know, these disgusting, gruesome corpses of people stung by bees and faces half chewed off by dogs and stuff. Like, there's the makeup of the show can get pretty gross too. So, I guess that they have like an older Y7 audience if that exists.
Well, I guess hopefully they're thinking that the parents are sending their children to bed before, what was it, on it, like 9. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's shows like, or I should say episodes of, let's just say like a show like Grey's Anatomy or Desperate Housewives that I would watch and I would be surprised it would be rated Y7 as opposed to TV-14. But the show seems to be TV-Y7 all the time. But I've even seen some episodes of like, let's say Grey's Anatomy that are pretty gruesome that are still rated Y7. So I feel like the Y7 rating is still pretty loose and doesn't really define like family-friendly all the time, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with, especially thinking about Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, some of those cases are just, like, they're just gross.
Well, they're a lot like Pushing Daisies, because the makeup jobs are usually pretty disgusting. And, like, think about, like, the man in Pushing Daisies on Grey's Anatomy that looks like he had tree bark all over his body. Like,
oh, yeah, that was so creepy.
Yeah, that's something they would do in Pushing Daisies, easily.
Oh, I forgot about that episode.
I know, I shouldn't have reminded you of it.
The episode that's my go-to for, like, the grossness of Grey's Anatomy, besides the one where, like, 7 people are stuck together on a pole, because that was just very emotionally trying for me when they had to decide who lived and who died.
Yeah, depending on who gets taken off the pole first.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
But the other one is when, like, they come out of the car from, like, a camping trip or something, and the guy's, like, holding his stomach, and I'm like, oh, he's just gonna be sick, it's okay, but then he lets go of his stomach, and his intestines fall out in, like, the bay, and I was like, oh my God!
Oh my God, I didn't watch that far. I'm kind of glad I didn't. That sounds disgusting. Holy crap.
Oh, that like one episode, I can't tell you a single thing that happens in that episode except that, because it like has scarred me.
That's traumatizing for Grey's Anatomy especially. Like, I feel like that's even pushing the envelope of what that show would want to do. That's like Saw level.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's it horrible. Was the worst. I just remember Pushing
Daisies isn't like that gross of a show, but it does have like that lady sneezing and globbering all over the, you know, Emerson's book and stuff. Like, there's some gross stuff, but not like gory stuff like Grey's Anatomy has. Thank God. Oh.
Yeah, because even when the guy, the father had like the pole like through his head, like they make it kind of comical, like where he tries to run out the door, or the other guy who got stabbed, the like life insurance person, like the rice is coming through the pipe as he's like sitting there,
and it did make me laugh when that was happening. I was like, oh, ha, he's still not really that hurt because it's just rice. Well, you know, he should have been like, if it was Grey's Anatomy, every single character in that room would have been covered in the blood of a spewing artery that'd still be going post-mortem.
And Christina would be like, I could fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny, though. I didn't realize that there were that many similarities between the makeup teams of Grey's Anatomy and Pushing Daisies until we just, you know, compared the two side by side.
Maybe Shonda had something to do about it.
Shonda's an evil woman. If she had her hands on Pushing Daisies, I mean, the fact that this show allows you to bring back people from the dead, she would eat that up. Can you imagine if she had her hands on this concept? Oh, God.
Oh, it would be... Like, I can barely handle Scandal, and I know Christina's watching it right now. It's just too much sometimes. Like, it's like a season's worth of twists in every episode. Like, I'm physically exhausted after watching Scandal.
A big twist just happened, and I can't even... right now even think about it. It's like making me sick.
That's funny. Yeah, I know the feeling, and I feel like a lot of people are relating to that with watching Game of Thrones nowadays, right? Because single episode I always hear that the biggest thing ever happened, and I'm just like, how many times can that really be said and that be true? And then I always spoil myself and look at like Kyle's GIF recaps and stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. I've never seen a single episode of Game of Thrones, but I know every single twist that has happened and how every single character dies.
I know. You know what? Okay, we'll run back to Pushing Daisies by saying this much. This is a discussion that we were having like the past two episodes of Rewatchable, but I still feel that we're not getting those big twists other than like, you know, Lily's the mom of Chuck, like in Pushing Daisies. And that's what I miss. I miss big twists and big reveals in a show. I don't like it when it's just, like we're saying, like, you know, not really serialized and more of just like episode of the week kind of deal.
Yeah, and I definitely agree, especially with the next episode. Maybe I'll hold this thought until then, but it felt like very, very comical, and to the point, I think we had brought this up, maybe we brought it up last time, I know the three of us and Caitlin were together, where it just, it was so Scooby-Doo-esque, like, oh, yeah. the chasing of the people. I was like, I was so, rewatching it, I was like, why, like, it hit me finally, where I was like, oh, yeah, this is getting a little silly now.
And that's my beef with Doctor Who, that I feel like Doctor Who has a lot of Scooby-Doo-ness to it, too. And that it gets such a high, you know, reverend from everyone about being, like, it's a family show that's very dark and mysterious and has a lot of great mythology. And, like, okay, that's great, but the drama itself is ridiculous. Like, the reveals and catching the bad guy often do come down to Scooby-Doo-like chases, like they do on Pushing Daisies sometimes. And it's just, I don't dig that kind of drama. It's not drama to me. That's just cop-out. I don't really care about my writing. I'm going to just throw in this generic, you know, formula of how to entertain my audience with, like, this Three Stooges slapstick humor. You know, it's not, it just feels very dated and not funny to an audience of this day and age anymore.
Yeah, and in terms of, like, I feel like they're not necessarily, the writers aren't saying, like, oh, we're just going to, like, cop out and do it. I feel like they have so many ideas of how it could be that they try to put all of them in. So it's, like, the art of, like, distraction, but at the same, it's not working.
And it's a tough balance to do, and I know that was a big discussion we would have about Veronica Mars and that form of rewatchable. And Christine will relate to this because you've watched that show, that Veronica Mars walks a very tight line on the art of distraction that Pushing Daisies often doesn't achieve, and that Veronica Mars just barely scraped by sometimes. There are many episodes of both Pushing Daisies and Veronica Mars where I get lost in the distraction to the point where I don't care who the killer is. I do not care who stole the money. I just don't. It doesn't matter because there have been too many big, you know, red flags. That's what I said about the Nun episode when we were trying to find out who pushed the Nun off the bell. It didn't matter anymore because there were so many people who were just the ultimate bad guy at one point that it just stopped mattering, right?
And then it ended up being, like, Pigby, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I was just like, well, why did it matter that all these characters had all these other bad qualities to them? And I mean, the Butcher was tying people up, looked like he wanted to kill people, and the Nun was faking letters to end relationships. It was just, it all was just kind of silly, and it seemed just irrelevant to the final mystery of Pigby being the killer. Like, they just kind of threw Pigby in the end. Like, ha, we fooled you, but it really didn't matter, you know?
Yeah, and that's one good thing that they did with that Bubblegum episode is that they brought Simone back. Like, one of those, like, side stories that we sort of, like, wrote off, it's because it had some development with Emerson. Like, we saw Emerson responding to, like, flirtation, and we kind of got a sense of, even though we're not totally on board with it, like, what he likes, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that they did well, I think, in bringing her back, so...
Yeah, Simone was a great pick to bring back of all the characters that they could have picked. They're picking through a hat or something, you know, like, I think that that's probably a little bit more important than, like, that traveling salesman, even. Although, I'd love to see him come
Alfredo?
Back.
Alfredo? I want Alfredo to come back.
Yeah, Alfredo, right? So you remember his name?
Yeah, he was, like, Simone was my favorite, like, side character, and he was, like, my other favorite.
Well, because they had relevance in the story, for one.
Yeah.
The characters, they affected them forever. They didn't just kind of show up. And that's funny, because Brittany, the other character that I'm mentioning that's going to come back, also has a big importance on our main characters. I'm really, really teasing Christine right now.
You are. You are really, really teasing.
This is like the
second
time today that you're really pissing me off.
Oh, I can't wait. That's really cool. Well, I'm glad that they're at least picking the side characters to come back that are important. That makes me feel like Pushing Daisies is doing one thing very right. That's cool.
Yeah, and I feel like they might have had, this is again, like, sort of giving them an out in my own words, that they could have had these larger plans and everything got truncated. So, like, what could they have done with 22 episodes becomes the thing. Like, would it have been this, like, campy, or would it have been something better?
Well, that's a lot of, like, what is said about the future of Glee, for instance, how, you know, the upcoming season will probably be less episodes than originally thought. And then Veronica Mars ending, I think, like 5 episodes before it was supposed to, right, Christine, in season 3 and stuff. Yeah. And that's where I feel that the potential for that movie tie-in for Pushing Daisies and the Veronica Mars movies play in, because they allow the writers to do things with the characters they never got to and put new situations in, you know, by, like, throwing new... I was about to say new groups in, but I've already got over the fact that Pushing Daisies pretty much exhausted its groups with its small cast, so I don't know if they're really gonna do that in their movie unless they added new characters. I don't know. It just feels like everyone knows everyone, and they've talked to everyone, and they've worked out their stuff. There's no... It still is feeling pretty stagnant in that form of drama, unfortunately, especially in these 2 episodes.
Yeah, I just wish so much, like, I guess, like, in the first season, like, so much had just been, like, cut out, and then, like, this been, like, shifted, like, what's going on now been, like, shifted forward, like, or backwards, like, closer to the first season. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
That's yeah. That's time-wise you're saying, right?
What?
Like with the timeline?
Yeah, I just wish, like, we were, Emerson, like, Simone was in earlier, and we were, like, finding out about, like, Ned meeting his brothers, because I'm, like, that's the stuff that would make me want to come back every week.
Yeah, well, like, you're saying, like, farther away than the drama that we've already seen, because it does just feel like, basically, that reveal that Lily is Chuck's mom happened just yesterday, right before season 2 started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. That would have been nice to, like, see everyone trying to hide that for her for a while. And that's a lot of what Veronica Mars did really well, too. I really liked it when a new season would start very far away from where we last were, and that we didn't necessarily see all the consequences of the big explosion of the finale that happened. Now, sometimes they did kind of squib out on showing us the reactions of some characters, and that was a bit annoying, but it worked pretty much to that show's benefit, so... Well, I love that we can just, you know, always relate to what we're talking about to Veronica Mars, because this is rewatchable and because we have people on this that have inevitably watched and enjoyed that show as much as I have.
I really should watch it before I post again, you know?
Yeah, seriously, look at us. We're just like, you know.
Everyone. I always just like mute my microphone. I'm like, la, la, la.
You're like, oh, Veronica Mars done.
Yeah. Like trying to stream it an episode while you guys are talking.
I relate everything in my life to Veronica Mars, so like that's how my mind is.
I don't blame you. I still find myself day to day like going through and finding moments that fit to what Veronica has decided. I'm like, oh, you know what? Like I would do that too, because that's what Veronica did, and it just feels right because she already did it. She's a great role model. Hell, I mean, she makes some mistakes, and all characters in TV shows will, but I just loved her to death for how much she's really done to strengthen that, you know, TV female-led stigma. It doesn't seem to happen too often, but when shows like Buffy and Veronica Mars come by, they kick ass.
Go women.
Go women! We do have some pretty strong women on Pushing Daisies. I gotta say that, I mean, Caitlin has gripes about how Chuck and Olive were only talking about Ned in their roommate bonding sessions. But I'd like to say that they are pretty strong, only from the way that they assert themselves in conversations. Now, I do agree they talk about Ned a little bit too much to make them, like, as independent as I'd like for them to be. But I do like when, basically, like, when Oliver or Chuck want to get in on one of these cases, they do it. They just tell Emerson, basically. They're like, you know what, I'm going to, like, join along, and there's nothing you can do with it. And I love that they're just really assertive like that.
Yeah, and in this episode, that's a perfect little segue to Ned's twin brothers. They sort of take, I mean, yes, it has to do with Ned, but they take that initiative to just show up with a pie and figure out this little mystery on their own without anyone, like, sort of egging them on or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, that's a really good little reference you made there. I like that. Transitioning into meeting the brothers, which is cool, too, because they're in one episode as an introduction, and then their plots brought into the next episode. It felt like a treat. I was like, wow, Pushing Daisies is carrying over a major plot line from one episode to the next. This is
yeah.
Like the Aunt Lily's the mom thing all over again.
And I loved that when Olive was like, look at their eyebrows. Like, that's like the thing that drew them to Ned.
Well, that's pretty like, similar.
Oh. They're like, oh, he's definitely his brother. Look at those eyebrows.
They have some big man brows.
Yes.
So, speaking of Olive, do we think that she's attracted to them because they're Ned's brothers, or just like. I think.
They're a proxy for her love.
Yeah, I think she's just like. She finally has a little bit of Ned's life, like, kind of to herself for a minute. You know, like, she, even though she's sharing it with Chuck, it's sort of one of those, like, I know something about Ned. I don't know. I feel like she was just happy with the information, maybe not the actual people.
I agree. And I also kind of, like, and I guess this also carries a little bit over into the next episode, but just, it's, like, a boy that, like, they can talk about together. Or, like, boys, like, they can be like, ooh, boys, like, without it being like, oh, that's my boyfriend, though, and you're in love with my boyfriend.
Well, you know, while we're speaking of who Olive is attracted to, she definitely likes Ned's father's co-veteran.
Right? Oh, yeah, Dwight Dixon.
Veteran, I should say, not veteran. Yeah, yeah, so, and at first it was funny to me, because I thought that was his father, because we've already had it confirmed in the continuity of Pushing Daisies that Ned's father is creeping on him in the pie hole. He's, like, sitting mm-hmm. there in, like, the undercover costume of, you know, a trench coat and a hat, whatever. To the best of my knowledge, right, Christine? You're with me on that?
Yes.
All right. So then, did you also think with me, Christine, that that was Ned's father?
That's what I thought at first.
Right. And that's why I was like, okay, so then Olive has a proxy crush.
That's exactly
on...
what I thought. I had to go, like, I, like, went and, like, checked, like, different, like, wikis.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, okay, so you thought that the whole time, this whole episode, you thought that he was the father.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Well, then it makes sense. Well, it would have made sense if that was Ned's father, because, like we were saying, the proxy crushes that Olive may or may not have toward people in Olive, in Ned's family. Yeah, I feel like that's a storyline in Les Mis, too, isn't it? Like, you, or something like that. No, oh, God. It's not Les Mis. It's nothing close to that. I hate making this reference. It always happens to me once on a run of rewatchable. That reminds me of Twilight.
Oh, no.
I know. And I have to explain it now because I already brought it up. Oh, it's like how Bella and Edward get together and Jacob really likes Bella, but he's just like, well, I'll just wait for your daughter to like hit puberty, then I'll date her.
Wait, does that happen?
Yes. Yes, yeah. That happens.
I stopped.
He imprints on her, which is, like, supernatural, so like, I kind of gave him a little bit of leeway, but,
Oh, wait, no. Okay, so I stopped reading when the baby tried to eat its way out of Bella.
Oh, that's funny.
I stopped. Like, I don't know anything past that, so that's really gross.
And that's a spoiler to anyone who hasn't finished Twilight, but I really don't feel, A, that's necessary, because if you cared, you already would have known it, and B...
I think it's fine.
It's fine, because it's, like, so old of a spoiler in the movie.
And it's so gross and weird.
And you can take my reaction and just use it as your own, because, ew. Like, I did not know that.
It's like, you know, it's like, oh, Voldemort dies in the end. It's like, you know, whatever. Darth Vader is Luke's father. Okay.
I'm still processing the Twilight news.
Yeah. Sorry. Now you see how it'd be really... twisted if that was to fit in with Olive and the father, right? Kind of. It's, you know, like, can't date the mother, date the daughter, can't date the son, date the father.
Yeah. Then I was also like, is Olive just, like, attracted to everyone?
I feel like a little bit.
She's always trying to get her groove on, right, Pigby? Oh,
I get it, girl.
Get it, girl. She's digging holes in the ground. That's how she's getting her groove on, I guess.
Pigby, pull!
Pigby, pull! I'm so glad that joke's transferred. So that's the Twilight reference of the Rewatchable. I'll make sure to keep it at one for this time around, huh?
Alright, so we're going to check that off the list of things that can only happen once.
I have to tell you, Christine, the one I made out on Veronica Mars Rewatchable, I think was like... Oh god, I think it was like with Duncan... And it was with Logan and Veronica, and how Logan was the Edward naturally, and I think he was like brooding against a car like Edward does in the Twilight movies.
Oh, so Edward.
Yeah.
I never ever want to compare those two,
because but he is, because he really does brood like Edward, and it's funny how similar he is. But I mean, she's nothing like Bella. Oh my god, nothing. Thank god.
Right now, I'm just gonna think of Logan as Edward.
It's
thank
pretty
you,
hard
Dad.
Not to, quite frankly, because he's like a rich kid who bad things happen to, and he just can't get what he wants, his one true love. It's
except he likes his women to be strong.
Yeah, not like little weak pansies that he can control, right? Henceforth, once again, this episode of Pushing Daisies does relate because we talked about 50 Shades of Grey. 50 Shades of Grey is a Twilight fan fiction.
It is.
So Emerson Simone starring in 50 Shades of Grey. That would be an interesting cast.
That would be.
I'm sure there's a fan trailer out there. If we thought about it now, I mean, we're not the first ones to think of it.
Because they do have that scene from the older Pushing Daisies episode where Simone is first introduced, where Emerson is tied up.
Oh, no.
It's like the ball gag in
the ball gag is in his mouth.
Oh, no. That's really bad. You're right.
If it's not out there, maybe it should be us. Maybe we should be making
this
trailer.
Maybe we should be creating the Pushing Daisies 50 Shades of Grey trailer. It just fits too well. That's really creepy.
Well, I know what the rest of my Wednesday night entails. So. You guys can finish this episode. I'll be back later.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay, so moving on.
Okay, wait. Eyebrows, though. I had a really important question.
Okay.
We were talking about the eyebrows look like Ned's. Those eyebrows look drawn on to me. I didn't think, like, to me, it seemed like those actors just looked awkward with those big eyebrows, and it distracted me whenever they were on camera.
Okay, I Googled them, those actors, because I wanted to know. I really thought that they did a split screen.
Yeah.
But they are twins, mm-hmm. and they don't look, their eyebrows were definitely drawn on.
Okay. Are they?
Yeah. They look pretty obnoxious on them.
Because, like, their eyebrows are, like, I mean, they're big, but they're not, like, Lee Pace's.
Well, I can pretty much tell just by looking at them, though. It doesn't, like, fit their forehead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, their eyebrows are a lot lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely makes more sense. Well, I don't think they look bad on Lee Pace. Like, Lee Pace is a very attractive man, as I'm sure, I think it is. Christine's going to agree with me later on as a super in the doc. He's a very sexy man, and it really feels that his brothers were meant to have the same sex appeal as him, but they just quite didn't because of those eyebrows. It was really close, though. They casted them pretty well. I don't know. I always think, like, when you get identical twins casted, the chances of them being attractive and being able to act is like, slim to none. Like, if you think about it, like, in the normal population of just, you know, whatever, layman people off the street, the fact that you have to be attractive and, you know, good at acting to be in Hollywood is already, like, a really slim chance, you know? So how do twins ever come together like that? How are there ever Tia and Tamara Mowry's out there, you know?
Yeah.
Or Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen's, you know, like... It always shocks me when I find attractive twins that can act that are identical twins. It's a really specific thing of humanity to be able to exist in that niche.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of attractiveness and Lee Pace...
Oh, here it comes.
Christine really seemed to enjoy Lee Pace and his mustache when they were undercover.
Mm. This is the last point I made. I was all about
the accent.
I was all about it. I was just like, oh, even the mustache, man, you're doing it. I love it.
Did either of you watch Halt and Catch Fire?
No, I want to, though.
It's Lee Pace's new show, and I tweeted while watching it, but I was so nervous for him to touch anyone.
Oh, that's funny.
Like, all of a sudden, like, within, like, the first 10 minutes of the episode, he's, like, hooking up with some girl, and I'm like, oh, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to Lee Pace being able to, like, use his sex appeal for something.
Wait, that happens? Like... I need to watch this show.
Yeah, no, you definitely need to watch it. He is, like, Don Draper in the 80s tech world.
That's what I heard, and I was like, oh my god, I need to watch.
He's, like, nerdy, and he knows his computers, and he, like, has, like, a pitch that he gives. Oh, and he gets angry.
I'd like to see him angry.
It's a whole different Lee Pace. It's
so
good.
He has, like, a good range. Have you guys seen Wonder Falls?
Yes.
I haven't seen anything.
Like, where he kind of plays, I don't want to say, like, douchey, but, like, what was he? Like, he was, like, the brother who, like, is kind of a mess.
Yeah.
So he has, like, range. He's a good actor.
Yeah, he is a very good actor, and when I was watching it, within 5 minutes, you're like, oh, that's not Ned, just because we've been watching so much Pushing Daisies. I was like, oh, this is going to be like watching Ned, but he is so good.
Well, if you guys didn't know this already, wrap your minds around the fact that he's going to be the main villain in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
What? How is he a villain? He just is like, he's too gushy to be a villain. I only see him as Ned because I haven't seen him as anything else.
He's also in Hobbit.
Wait, in the upcoming, or?
I don't know if he was in, I'm not sure if he was in the first one, but I'm pretty sure he was in the second one. And he, like, is, like, Evangeline Lilly's, like, love interest, I think.
Yeah, he plays the Elven King Thranduil.
Yes. Oh, he was in the first one, yeah.
How did they make him look that short?
Well, he's an elf. He's
Elves
he's
aren't an elf. Aren't short.
Yeah, he's normal size.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay, never mind. I thought he was, because Evangeline Lilly has, like, two love interests, so that's why I got confused.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to do this. I'm bringing up Twilight again.
Oh, no. Two in one episode. Here we go.
Mitch, have you seen the Twilight movies?
Have I seen that? Yeah. Yes.
Well, I haven't. I have not seen the Twilight movies, so I wanted to know. He plays Garrett, a vampire, in the fourth movie.
You're
oh, my God. He's, really, like, really... Well, they're all really pale, but, like, he looks especially pale.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, I wish I could forget about it again.
Is he Irish? And he wears, like, a little cap?
I don't know. I just read the name.
No, like, I don't... Here's the thing. Like, I don't remember him in the movie. Hold I remember on, him in the promotional images.
Garrett.
Oh, that's really weird. I can't wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, he has, like... Yeah, he's Irishy looking. Like, he has red hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wears, like, a key necklace, it looks like.
Oh, that's so strange. I don't know. Lee Pace.
Oh, and he has an eyeliner. Right. Oh my gosh.
Lee Pace is pretty transformative. It's he's almost like the new Gary Oldman or something now to me, because he just like is not recognizable in a new role. All of a sudden, when I see him in a new thing, he just is so different. Like, I even saw like a red carpet picture of him because I dared to Google Pushing Daisies by accident. I don't know how I did, but I just happened to see just one picture of what's coming up, and it was not coming up. It was just of them on the red carpet. And also, I'm always really surprised with what Chuck's actress looks like, because from like the photo shoots that I've seen pictures of her in, she looks really sexed up.
Yeah, she does.
Like near nude or nude.
Yeah, that's like a thing that she does. She's naked. It's her thing.
And it's funny because like I'm Pushing Daisies, she's in a. And if anything, she's only promiscuous when she's with Ned, but other than that, she's, you know, kind of like, I lived with my aunts all my life, and I, you know, talk to stuffed birds on a daily basis, not like, oh, hey, boys, you know?
Yeah, and even, I think it was it in this episode? It might have been, well, we can sort of, like, segue with this. It was either in this episode or the next episode. It was just their costumes like bothered me for some reason, because in the start of this episode, like Chuck comes out with like those flowers in her hair, and then she's like, like Olive's waitress's outfits always struck me as like very 60s go-go.
Yeah, but her boobs are hanging out that too, and that's really promiscuous, I always thought.
Yeah, but in this episode, and like I felt like Chuck was like very like 1968, 1969, early 70s, just like. Style wise, and then Emerson had like those very florally like patterned shirts. I saw that you like pointed that out on there, because I just like everything like felt like so 70s. Mm-hmm. Like
early I'm happy 70s. That you had like noticed it also, because I originally had it in the doc, but I was like, oh, like maybe I'm just like being like weird or something by noticing this.
Not so rewatchable. Trust me. Whenever you think something's like too nuanced and weird, like a dog neon sign, you're not alone.
So I was really happy that you put that in, Brittany, because I agree, the costume was just like, I wonder if they had a different costume person. It was just weird.
Maybe the intern got to like flex their inner fashion muscle this episode or something, who knows.
Yeah, it was just, it really, and it added to the Scooby-Doo-ness of the episode, I think, especially in the next episode, which we'll get to in a sec. After we do our favorites from this episode. But at the, like, towards the end, like, I think Olive is, like, sort of running around in, like, knee-high white boots and, like, a short plaid skirt. And I was like, this is so, like, retro-y feeling. And it really took me out of the episode for the first time in a while, where I just sat there and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I was so focused on something that I, like, was just not enjoying it.
Well, can we talk about the costumes that Chuck and... Olive wore when they were dressed up almost like geisha costumes, but not really.
Oh, yeah. Like when they were the waitresses.
At the Chinese food restaurant, yeah. Mm-hmm. They looked really pretty. I really liked the makeup they put on them, and I couldn't tell if they had like a dark bronzer to try and make them look more like olive skin toned, you know, not pun not intended, but they look like their skin's a little bit darker, didn't they?
Yeah, especially I think Kristen Chenoweth, you could really, but it could have just been the dark hair on her.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't sure if it was just a new hair color or whatnot. Sometimes a new, like a darker hair color can make your skin look dark too, or light, depending on your general complexion. So I don't know. I couldn't tell. Maybe it's the lighting. They could have just darkened up the scene whenever they were in that, or digitally altered them or something. I don't know. It was there was definitely something different looking than just their makeup, I thought, though.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just had a tab open that I accidentally clicked with all images of Lee Pace as Garrett, and it's really disturbing because he is really pale.
Yeah, he's dead pale, but he should.
Yeah.
I clicked on like the
wrong tab there. But yeah, their costuming was I liked Chuck's wig a lot with the really short hair.
Yeah, and those were convincing wigs. They looked like they were real hair.
And I don't think anybody picked this as their favorite scene, which we are going to do next, I promise. Olive locks them in the bathroom and the people are walking by and she's like, nothing to see here. And she's like banging on the gong because they're trying to get out. And she's like, I just really love gongs.
Her comedic timing is spot on. That's why I was watching all of those Kristen Chenoweth YouTube videos, because it's not just to hear her voice when she sings. I want to see her perform, because she has like this really awesome stage presence where she knows how to like point in just the right direction to get you just like crack up laughing. Like her Taylor the Latte Boy famous skit that she does is just beyond awesome. She's so funny. I think oftentimes she saves the humor on Pushing Daisies from feeling campy.
Yeah, I think she's so, like, she's more than just her voice, which is a good thing, because sometimes you get people who try to act and you're just like, stick to Broadway, honey, but she is just, she's perfect.
Or sometimes you get people who just look good and can't act, like Kristen Stewart.
We've really cashed out.
You know, it makes me really happy, though, out of all those videos, there was the one where she accepts her Emmy for, co-star or side character in a comedy. And she went over people like Amy Poehler and the lady from Bridesmaids. God, I can forget her name right now.
Melissa McCarthy?
No.
Maya Rudolph?
No, the main girl.
Kristen Wiig.
Thank you. She went over like, you know, big SNL actresses and stuff. And I think she deserved it, quite frankly, because when she went up on stage, even, she was like crying, like she was really upset. She kept on making jokes like that were in it, and I couldn't even try and replicate her humor. But I really recommend anyone, well, I'll just link it in the show notes, her acceptance speech, because it's like touching and it's humorous at the same time, and you can really feel like, you know, I guess that if you're watching Pushing Daisies with us, you'd agree too that, you know, she deserves it, not only from like a standpoint of, yes, she's funny in the show, but she's funny in real life. This lady definitely, like, was my, out of all those people that were up for grabs, she definitely deserved her win for Pushing Daisies.
Yeah, and I had mentioned this, I think, last week. I love Kristen Chenoweth, but sometimes, like, I'm not particularly a big fan of her on Glee, but I think, like, she's the best part about Pushing Daisies in my mind, and I think she's amazing, and sometimes she, like, saves it a lot of times for me.
She does, yeah.
And I remember, like, when we were doing the intro episode for starting up Pushing Daisies, she was the reason why I started watching the show, mainly because I only knew her from Broadway. But at the same time, I was like, she's the one who got me hooked on the show. Besides then Lee Pace's beautiful face, like, you know, whatever comes with the territory.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, it's funny, too. I think on the first episode of Rewatchable Pushing Daisies, when we were introducing ourselves, I didn't even know she was in the show. And all of a sudden, I figured it out. I was like, wow, I'm actually a lot more excited for this show than I was before. So that was really good casting. Could you imagine anyone else there?
Nope.
No.
She's perfect for this role.
I also think it's like, it's her voice. It's like her against Emerson. Like, just the way the characters are. I think she just fits
and basically,
it
if you want like a perfect representation of her humor, Pigby Paul!
I still love Olive Emerson spinoff campaign right now.
That'd be kind of fun. Yeah, in that episode, they did have a lot of scenes together because she was asking him for the help to find out who killed LaRue. Yeah, that'd be fun. I'd really dig that. That'd be really cool. Oh God, I can't wait. Well, I don't know if we're gonna do this officially or not, but I hope we have like an episode of Rewatchable where we just kind of reflect on Pushing Daisies and we make out our hopes for what we want the future play, musical, movie, book, audiobook, et cetera, whatever else has been thrown out for the show. I wish I knew what they were making. Don't they have like 5 ideas of what they want to do right now?
Yeah, they like for stage, they want to do a movie, and everyone is like on board. I don't know
for about everything all at once.
Well, you know, Kristen Chenoweth is like, I'll do whatever you want.
Well, she loved Olive. You can definitely tell that she made her own character. Like, very specifically, she went in and decided what Olive would say in certain scenarios and stuff. But I really, what I was saying is, I really hope that we get to, like, sit down and figure out with each other as a group what we would want, specifically in form of the medium, and then, you know, what would happen. I wonder if other people would agree with us and Rewatchable about Emerson and Olive spinoff. That'd be fun.
Yeah, well, I think the last episode of Pushing Daisies is going to be a standalone podcast, so we should do half wrapping it up and maybe half predictions for the future.
Yeah, because we have 13 episodes for the season, so it'd be odd. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Season finale will work that way.
We'll work that.
Interesting stuff. So,
well, let's wrap up this episode. Then,
right?
Yeah. So my favorite scene from this week was Chuck and Ned when they're leaning over the counter and they're talking to Emerson and they're trying to like ask him if he and Simone are just did more than talked. But I think that it goes right back to Lee Pace's face. It is so adorable in this scene when he's like smirking like trying not to be all giggly. And it's just, it was the cutest he's ever looked in the whole series.
He was fracking adorable there. Oh my God.
I agree. He was so cute. This, I mean, the episode, he was just so cute.
He was dreamy. Oh my God.
Lovely. Maybe you know why? I think he wasn't whining at all also.
Yes. No, that is a big part of it.
Get ready, he's going to be whining a lot in the next episode.
Oh, boy. All right, Christine, before we break shatter the illusion, what was your favorite scene?
I'm not sure if this is the same as you, Mitch, but just Emerson and Ned in disguise. Obviously, we know how I feel about Ned and his mustache, but Emerson with the wig, I think he should wear that all the time. Like, the outfit with, like, the pie necklace, I just love
it. Wait, he had a pie necklace? I didn't even notice.
No, not... but. Oh, actually, now I'm looking at a picture. That's why I'm saying this. But, like, not the pie symbol. Like, 3.1.
Oh, yeah. It was a pie symbol.
Now I'm putting this connection together.
Oh, that's funny. Wait, who was wearing it? Emerson or Ned?
Emerson was.
Which that's is kind of... like, it's cute. It's like he's embracing the fact that he's working with someone that works at the pile, finally, and not just saying, like, whatever. It's cute. It's like he's, like, representing his friend by wearing that. Aww.
Right. Someone else look at this picture and make sure it's the pie symbol and not me.
No, I definitely, I watched okay. these, yeah. Recently. Okay. It's definitely the pie symbol.
That's great. That's funny. And, I mean, my scene is similar to yours, so I'll specify it even more. Ooh, Lee Pace's cowboy accent. Oh, boy. I can't tell right now, but I'm fanning myself.
I actually could tell, by the way. Like, your inflection. I knew you were fanning yourself. I knew.
I feel like this is like an acting class. Like, make an inflect your voice like you're fanning yourself. You know?
You just gotta add like a woo in there.
Ooh. Oh, that's funny. I should be an audiobook reader now, right?
Yeah. For like only Southern dramas.
Yes. Yeah. But in Jim Dale's voice, because Jim Dale's obviously the best voice in the world ever for reading anything. Yeah. I do wonder what it would be like to hear someone British doing a country accent while still talking with like their British inflections. Not their accent, but their British inflections. That'd be really interesting. I want to hear how Jim Dale would... I wonder if Jim Dale... I guess I wish that Jim Dale's narration had... like mimicked something Ned said. Like, let's just say like Ned said, "Howdy, partner," and then Jim Dale had to like mimic that, and that would be really cool. I would love that.
Like the inception of accents.
Yeah, that's like a big inception of accents. Because like inflection and draw mixes in with another inflection and drawing out. It'd be really cool.
Well, I think you should write a letter.
Jim Dale, I have a request.
I feel like Jim Dale would only respond to letters, which is why I suggested that.
He's probably very classy. Would. I'm sure that's how he got into that one episode of MuggleCast, throwback, way back from when. If you guys listened to MuggleCast 2 back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he, and he gave good advice, I remember. I'm always never going to forget Jim Dale told the MuggleCasters that the way he gets ready to be on microphone, and I always think about this, is that you're supposed to bite into a green apple because it allows you to not have as much saliva in your mouth and to have a clearer sounding voice, apparently. And he said that he swears by it and he does it for like everything. So wow, he does have a very clear voice. Like, it makes sense.
He does. I should find a green apple in the next 30 seconds before I read the synopsis for the next episode.
That should be like the new rule for all podcasters. Everyone has to have a green apple.
Before. I know. Jim Dale said it and he's like the king of voice. So I just trust him. He's like up there with like Nat King Cole to me.
Well, speaking of voices, I'm about to do my best Emerson impression, so get ready.
I'm ready.
So my favorite line from this episode was right after the life insurance agent got impaled by the pipe, and Emerson, like, without missing a beat, like, this guy just died in front of them, and he just goes, "You think just because you're dead, we ain't going to find out what you've been up to, but you are so wrong."
I'll give you, I'll be a harsh critic, 3 out of 5.
Yeah, no, it was bad. As soon as I got to the "we ain't," it was over.
Mm-hmm. I was waiting for it. I was like, I wanted to keep it going.
Yeah. No, I got embarrassed.
I'd give you a 4 out of 5.
Thank you. Thank you. You're very kind. Mainly because I'm very excited about you to read your favorite quote.
Oh, no, this quote. Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, this was when, I guess, it was like Dwight Dixon was in the pie hole, and
Ned was talking. How is this your favorite quote?
What?
This creeped me out.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of weird that this is my favorite quote. Yeah, I'm a little weird. And they're talking about Dwight, and I think, like, Olive says something about, like, how he's cute, and Ned says, "Do you ever shiver when you pee? Because that's how I feel when he spoke."
Oh, and
it was, like, obviously disgusting, but I just can't, like, I think that was, like, the last thing I was ever expecting to come out of Ned's mouth.
Yeah.
And that's why I loved it. I was just, like, I was, like, taken aback by it. I was like, whoa. And I kind of was into it.
I mean, quite frankly, I'm not judging anyone who said they could feel this way, but I don't know what that means. I was just like, what? Like, I kind of equivalent it to, like, when I have a fever and I get the chills. It just feels like it, like, hurts to get those chills.
Ned just gets the chills when he pees.
He gets the chills
don't
when he pees.
Don't judge.
That's unfortunate.
Well, he's very anxious.
Maybe everyone on Pushing Daisies needs to pass a kidney stone. And that's why they all agreed with him, and that's why they all knew what he was talking about.
They're like, oh, yeah.
Because everyone was like, yeah, of course, I know what that feels like. And I'm like, what? All right, so my quote is when Chuck's deciphering the Mandarin of, I don't even know who he was. He was kind of like this guy that just kind of walked into the pie hole or something and started talking in Mandarin for some reason. And he was telling them about the gambling and everything, and reflecting back on what the father used to do, and in the past, Chuck was translating. "You'd have a woman on each arm and all the milk you could drink." Ned would say, "Milk?" Chuck said, "Milk may be the wrong word. My Mandarin's a little bit rusty." Because obviously, you know, it's like whiskey or, you know, a hard liquor as opposed to, like, the milk glasses that they showed everyone drinking in the past.
It kind of reminded me of, like, How I Met Your Mother, when he's like, would be like, "Oh yeah, and we were eating sandwiches," and like the flashback shows them like just eating sandwiches.
Well, I can imagine what you're saying, because it would be like, is it like them eating sandwiches centrally or something?
No, it's like they're smoking pot.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And they would always say, they always catch themselves and be like, "Eating sandwiches."
Yeah, and it just reminded me how like they kind of like were showing it, but like they were actually like drinking milk in this like clip.
Right. Yeah, that's cute. That was a pretty well done clip. I think black and white really does a good job of masking over everything and making it look more period too. So I believed it though. It looked like an authentic gambling ring in like the 1920s.
I thought that originally that they were saying milk because it was during Prohibition, but then she pulled out the line about her Mandarin being rusty, and I was like, oh
well, that's a good point though. Well, it could have been because, you know what? Let's just say, like, the guy that was talking didn't want to reference the alcohol because maybe he's still of the mindset of prohibition, or he knew of that time period that you wouldn't have spoken of drinking alcohol or something like that, you know?
Yeah, this is where our listeners are like, finding too much in it.
Stop digging.
For both of us. All right, should we talk about some magic?
Oh, yes, let's talk about the magic episode.
Let's do it.
Okay.
I don't sound too pleased by that, so I'm sorry to let everyone down with that, but the Scooby-Doo chase, I don't know.
All right, well, let's hear about the episode first. So episode 6 is called Oh, 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 It's Magic. Just like the song.
You know.
Good. I'm glad you did it because I didn't feel like doing it. So in this episode, Maurice and Ralston, who are the twins, because we never named them earlier when we were talking about them.
I'm probably just still going to call them twins, quite frankly, because they hate, like, I agree with Ned. They had random names.
Yeah, they had, he's like, oh, well, now we got creative with the names.
Yeah, what did he call them? Do you remember? It was like.
Like Mercutio. I can't.
Oh, yeah, one of them was Mercutio. I forget what he called the other one.
Wasn't he like, my dad got really creative with the names after me.
Okay, so in this episode, Maurice and Ralston take the opportunity to get closer to their older brother by inviting everyone to their magic show at the Conjurer's Castle. Murder ensues, and Ned is finally able to openly discuss acid reflux and bladder control issues with his brothers. Meanwhile, Dwight takes Vivian out on a date in an attempt to get Charles's pocket watch and learns that the watch is in Chuck's coffin. The real trouble comes when Dwight decides to rob Chuck's grave only to find her coffin empty. Dun, dun, dun. I added that in. That wasn't written.
Dwight is confusing me right off the bat. I don't know what's going on with him. Why does he need to get back? Why does he want Chuck's pocket watch in the first place?
There has to be something. Didn't he have that thing, that little case that when he went to dinner, he was saying, I think there's something else behind this. I don't know. But when he had, in this episode at least, he had that case when they went out on their date and he was telling Vivian he had a spot for each of the three pocket watches and one of them was going to like throw it somewhere when it end, like when they were all, when the last living one was alive.
Wait, is this like a Deathly Hallows thing? Like, collect all of them in Master of Death, or what?
No, I think it's like they'd like made a pact with each other, the three people who went on like the peace mission, because he had that little case with three spots for pocket watches.
Wait, wasn't he just saying that though? I thought to like, as like,
oh, yeah, but I figured. Oh, okay. I was just answering it literally, not metaphorically. I was like, he wants all three pocket watches to put in this case.
So he made up this idea of a peace mission to Lily so that he could steal a pocket watch that he knew that she had or something?
I don't know if he made it up. He definitely knew the dad and the other guy.
So Chuck's dad. You know, I find myself oddly getting confused with Chuck's dad and Ned's dad. Maybe mm-hmm. because they're not really present often. I mean, Chuck's dad, understandably so.
Yeah, you know, in this episode, I kind of thought they were the same person for a while. Mm-hmm. Which, like, because I kept getting lost. And I'm glad that you brought that up because I meant to put this in the doc. I completely kept confusing them. Anytime they said Chuck's dad, in my head, it was like, oh, we're still looking for him in this episode, but we're not. Like, we're not looking for Chuck's dad. Chuck's dad is dead.
Yeah, and the thing is it's confusing, too, because Dwight says he's friends with Ned's dad, is looking for Ned's dad, then goes to the aunt's and then asks where the pocket watch was that...
Oh, wait, I'm so confused.
They had. Is that right? And then he has a gun in the end of the episode at his car seat, and that's how the episode ends? Like, that's the most I know of Dwight. He's confusing. I don't get... What is
well, the end of this episode is him digging up Chuck's grave.
But doesn't he have a gun?
Yeah, that's when he was sitting outside of...
That was in the last episode. It was like the end of the scene.
Yeah, that was like, because in the beginning of this episode, he goes in to talk to Lily and Vivian, but he knows Lily's secret. And he's sort of like hinting around it without actually saying it.
But what does that matter? Like, what does he care? Who is he for real? Am I supposed to know?
No, you're not. No, you don't know yet.
So I'm supposed to be confused. This reminds me of a lot of times when I'd be watching Veronica Mars, Christine and Unrewatchable, I'd be like, why are they introducing this character like I know them? I've never met them before.
I was always confused with Veronica Mars. Sometimes it, up till the third time I rewatched the series.
Yeah, it just gets, I don't know if I like that or not. I don't know if that's like good writing, so you know, that it's so good that I just simply can't wrap my mind around it, or it's like writing that they didn't really look around, weren't looking out for introductions and introductions in the right way. I don't know.
See, I like wasn't even confused. I wasn't confused until just now when you guys pointed out that he came for Ned's dad, but then ended up asking about Chuck's dad.
Yeah. Well, as long as they know. Well,
Ned's dad and Chuck's dad are the same person.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the background story that he gives is that he was in this peace service with Ned's dad and Chuck's dad. So I think we're supposed to believe that Ned and Chuck's dad were friends with Dwight.
Well, they lived next door to each other at one point, although we've never seen them interact next door to each other. So, well, the only people we've seen Chuck's dad and Ned's mom look at each other out the window as, I guess that it was really just a one-way looking if Ned's mom witnessed the death of Chuck's father. But other than that, that's the most we've seen between the parents of Chuck and Ned, right?
Yeah, it seemed like that should have been, if like Ned's dad and Chuck's dad were friends, that seems like more than just like kind of a friendship. Like, I feel like that should have been brought up, that they were like really close.
Yeah, because, you know, Chuck and Ned are dating. It makes sense to be like, well, our family has some history. Let's go over it, you know, not like, oh, this is the first interaction we've had with each other in X amount of years, and we have no history other than what we met as other than our childhood memories, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they should really have like, they should be, they're almost family friends rather than just neighbors to each other, aren't they?
Yeah. The way we're talking about it, like, it seems like they should be like best friends.
Right. Or just like longtime acquaintances.
Yeah.
Like the next door neighbor girl.
Yeah, and while we're on the issue of confusing timelines, I'm just going to jump ahead a little bit, because I like the point that you put in here, Christine, with the age difference between Ned and his brothers, because I was under the impression, and this is the first time I've ever really thought about it, it's the rewatchable mindset of digging, that when he goes trick-or-treating undercover, we were supposed, like, I thought that was after his first year at boarding school, like within a couple of months.
Yeah. Like, and they were like September to October.
Yeah. But then he, in this flashback, he's in the same, like, it's the same thing, but these kids are 4 years old. So was his dad, like, cheating?
That's what, and because the thing is, this is another thing that, because a lot of times after I, like, when I'm writing the doc, I'll going onto like a wiki just to like kind of double check everything, and that's where they had brought it up, saying like, oh, and like it seems like Ned's dad had been like cheating on his wife.
Oh, so and like, I was like, the Pushing Daisies wiki also agrees with that thought then, right?
Yeah, it didn't really confirm it, it just kind of was like, oh, because I don't want to say like this is a spoiler or anything, because it was just like, oh, and it kind of appears like as if something's wrong here. Something might not be right.
Which, now looking back, makes Ned's whininess a little bit better, and his distance between these brothers a little, in my own rationalization, a little more justified.
And it also makes me happier to agree with Ned when they jump in and they're like, okay, guys, here we go. We're going to the magic show, and here's your pie with the tickets underneath them, and we're all best friends. And Ned's like, how do we go from complete strangers to, like, blood relatives all of a sudden? That just is weird to me.
Yeah, well, those kids have also, like, I think that their overreaction is a byproduct of, like, their need for showmanship, because clearly they're magicians. And, two, because they've been living alone for, like, they're like, oh, well, I think, did their mom die? Or something happened with the mom. She
just, like, went away, they said.
Yeah, and then the dad left.
We call her the mistress because she is the woman that Ned's dad was cheating on with.
Mm-hmm. So, like, they've been, I think they're just sort of like, ooh, family. Like, they have, like, a family issue.
So they've really just been, like, hanging out in this house with that creepy scarfed magician for X amount of years when Ned's dad's been gone. Like, how long has Ned's dad been gone and the mom been gone? I don't know how long they've been, like, on their own. It's really unclear in this episode.
Yeah. Well, they left, they the dad left them at the magic show when I think they were the same age as Ned at 9.
Right. So that gets even more confusing too to me because I could have sworn that in the last episode that we discovered that when Chuck and Olive go to visit them for the first time, they ask about the dad and they're like, "Oh no, he left." Wasn't they? I swear they said like they left. He left like a year ago, but maybe I'm confusing that with the mom. The mom
I
also
think,
left just a year ago.
yeah, maybe the mom left.
Okay. So they well then now I'm thinking of the strange relationship that these boys have with the magician, the scarf magician, whatever his name was. Anyone know it?
Oh, the great
I have
I just
Herman.
yeah, Armand, because he was like, you could just call me great. He's like,
Well,
I'm not doing that.
okay, so the great Herman was like the father figure to these twins. I mean, maybe I'm pushing it and digging it too far. Wow, that's two references to the show's title. But I feel like it could be that the great Herman was also with the twins' mother.
Yeah, because why would he?
Why would he pick them up as sons?
He
Why?
was just a stranger, right?
Yeah. So, like, maybe that's why Ned's father left the new mom, the twins' mom, because he was like, "Well, you're cheating on me with the magician, even though I was cheating on my wife to be with you. So, I guess I'm just gonna breed cheating. I'm gonna get out of here now, you know." And that's it. Is that what
I
we're
don't
meant
know.
to
I feel like
believe?
we're in such a fanciful world that timeline-wise, maybe the writers didn't realize that we would, like, viewers would make that conclusion that Ned's dad was cheating on her. But I personally don't think that Ned's mom was sleeping with the magician. I think that the great Harmon was just sort of like, oh crap, what am I going to do with these boys? I think they, because he didn't raise them. They did go back with their mom, I guess. And he was just sort of a father figure.
Yeah, but that comes off as sketchy because, like, to me, it's like, oh, well, you have your father figure that hangs out with you where? What does he do with you guys? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, super sketchy.
Well, he just, like, is a
At the
random
Conjurer's
stranger.
Castle.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that at one point I got to the point where I was like, is this supposed to be like an allusion to the great Armand had crushes on the boys or something? I might even go as far as to say when they were children, but, you know, when they were adults, because there were times when he would talk about their dependence in a way that it sounded romantic more than it sounded like a father-son relationship.
I thought he was annoyed with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I always saw it as like he was like he's someone. Oh, think like when Ned showed up, he's like, oh, thank God! Like I have a break. Like someone can take them off my hands for a while. Because I think that he was turned off by their enthusiasm and dependency. Like he didn't. Because I think at one point in the towards the right before he's turned into a block of cement, he says something to Ned, sort of like he sort of gave them a little too much. Like he shouldn't have extended the olive branch that much to the kids because they sort of like clung on and didn't let go.
So yeah, so basically what we're saying is that in the fanciful world of Pushing Daisies, where we're not meant to really read into relationships like this, although sometimes we are, that the great Hermond was just wrong place, wrong time, and he felt maybe obliged to having made their father disappear somehow, even though apparently he was a magician too, which was kind of thrown in this episode. so the Ned of the twins' father is gone, and he's like, "Well, I pretty much did that. I did the magic trick, so I might as well be the father to them now." And, like, that's face value, all it is.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I took it.
I can swallow that only if I learn what happened to the twins' mother. I'd feel better about that. Because, I mean, there's a big hole in my theory about, like, why would she leave if she was with the magician, you know? Why would she leave if she's with the great Hermann? Maybe things got rocky. See, once again, I'm digging too much. I just need to know about the mother before I can feel like content in knowing what's going on. She only had one line. The twins are just like, "Oh, she's just gone for like a year, and we kept the house." It was so weird and flaky and non-committal of the show even to like just introduce a major character in this whole Ned family lineage line. Like, it's not a big deal.
Wait, hold on. Didn't sorry, I'm just saying, didn't he like the great Hermann like choose them because they were like kind of like new proteges for him?
Well, yeah.
Okay, never mind. That's all.
I mean, I'm taking it from Brittany's reactions that I'm not going to find out something as small and nuanced as what happened to the twins' mother. But I guess that we're supposed
I'm just trying to remember what they said in the episode, so I'm kind of looking
right at the script or something.
Yeah,
it was just like she's gone. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And last time we heard of a mother just leaving or dying or something, it was Chuck's mother, and that turned out to be a bigger deal, which is why it rose a bit of a red flag for me.
Yeah.
But digging aside, back to the Scooby-Doo-ness of this episode, we should probably
talk about that. Yeah. So it really bothered me this week, especially... Oh, and the end of the episode, I just thought of it, when they show the process of how the guy who eats glass, I forget his name, but
Scooby-Doo villain of the week.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo villain of the week, like how he like dug that hole and like slid one cement block in there and like had the other one moved over to bring back out. Like that felt very Scooby-Doo-esque because like you're used to seeing all like these trap doors and like they explain it. And I was like kind of waiting for the glass guy to be like, and I would have gotten away with it too if it hadn't been for like
those
two kids with the metal detectors.
If only Digby was around. Oh, that's funny. Oh, God.
Yeah, so, I wasn't, like, into the case at all. I didn't really...
Yeah. I tried really hard to be into it.
Instead, the entire time... Oh, go ahead. Sorry,
Christine. I found myself having to, like, kind of rewind sometimes because I was, like, I would, like, kind of daze off, not really paying attention, which was bad.
What was up with that assistant?
Oh, that feeds right into my point of what I was doing during this episode. I was Googling who she was because her face is so familiar.
Yeah.
She is the female cop on Reno 911.
Yes.
I was like, oh, that's how I know who you are.
Which makes more sense because to me, she always acts sketchy in that show. Like, I think just as like a person that in every given role, she's going to come off as sketchy.
Yeah.
It's me, like in this episode, she was still sketchy even when she wasn't wrong. Even when she was like, no, I really didn't kill anyone or anything, you know?
Yeah, she's very defensive.
Yeah, defensive is a good way of putting it. That's just sketchy, yeah.
But I
like her, though, in this episode. She wasn't my favorite character because I don't think any of the new characters introduced were my favorite characters, quite frankly. Neither the glass eater or the Herman or the assistant really impressed me.
Yeah, I didn't. The only thing I enjoyed about this episode, and which is an odd thing, which is why I'm bringing it up, is because if you've listened to me host before, you know that I'm not a huge Chuck fan. But Chuck's enthusiasm for magic in this episode, like, really kept me going. Like, just like when they're revealing like how he does the trick at the end, and she like plugs her ears.
And that's what I'm talking about. That it contrasts the actors so much because. She's like, I can't hear what a magic trick is. Like, she's the kind of character that would still believe in Santa Claus, you know?
Yeah.
It just really doesn't match anything else. It's really weird.
But, oddly, I enjoyed her this episode. Did not enjoy Aunt Acid-dependent Ned.
Oh, come on, I know. It's like, get over yourself. Why was he even taking Aunt Acid? Is it just the fact that... He's like, I'm about to make another Twilight reference. Bella doesn't like her birthdays, and she's like a big old bitch about it. Like, she sits around all day and is just like, oh, I don't want presents. I don't want people celebrating me. Is Ned just like, oh, I don't want to see a magic show. That's too much fun. Is that what I'm supposed to get out of that?
No, it's because he was too happy and in the previous episode. So like, they had to like balance it out with like him being miserable.
That is a very good point.
I mean, it could be just something to deal with like, I think they've made a big reference in this episode about how, I mean, even though it was random, Ned's father did magic, and that was the opening scene where he's doing that, you know, ball underneath the three cups trick. So he hates magic ever since. So if anything, that could be it. But he still was being very Bella Swan melodramatic about it. It was so obnoxious.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I didn't like was that the only part like that I really wanted to see more of and maybe like hashed out was at the last like 2 minutes of the episode where they figure out a way for Chuck to talk to Lily when they sent Olive in.
You know, that was a cute little ploy. I liked that. That was fun. I liked that whole bit, and I liked that Olive was wearing a bumblebee pendant specifically.
Yes, it goes back to that comment that we had about bees transferring, like, information because they transfer, like, the pollen.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's like giving new life. Like they're giving Chuck that new look
so
at her
nice.
Past life.
I like
so
that.
Nice.
And I know. I think we're all at this point just waiting for Chuck to reveal to her aunts that she's alive still somehow.
That's what I thought was happening, and I was like, "Good for you, Ned, for letting her like tell them the truth."
And instead, he just like stroked her hand through a glass wall.
It was
for body bags.
The body bags is bad.
Oh yeah.
It's all steamy and gross.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think
you know what's funny. I just had a random thought about Chuck. She died from having a plastic bag over her face. Yet she is perfectly fine and not claustrophobic, being either a body bag or having Saran wrap on her mouth.
That is true. She has zero post-traumatic stress.
She doesn't even seem to care. It's so... I don't think I'm... I've conceded defeat with trying to recognize what went on with Chuck's death, because it just doesn't make sense what's going on with her golden monkeys and smuggling them across the country and being murdered by this random killer who didn't seem to have any relevance to anything else at all and just decided to show up and try and kill her aunts. Just none of it went... I don't know. Like, Chuck's introduction, it still bothers me, and I really wish I knew more about what was meant to have happened.
Ooh, I have a theory.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this is not to actually what you're talking about. So.
Oh, about the plastic?
Yeah, but I just thought of this. So, you know how you're always about, last week you were talking about how if, like, Chuck dies of natural causes.
Right.
Can Ned bring her back again? I don't think, like, I think the only way she can die again is if Ned touches her again. Because Digby should be dead by now.
Oh, well, I was thinking about that a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I was wondering, like, is the only way that, like, they can die now is by Ned touching them? Or are they just kind of these, like, floating conscious bodies? That's creepy.
That would be interesting. You know, it's almost like they're a ghost to the person that brought them back to life.
Yeah.
And they're like immortal. They're like stuck in their one age.
Yeah. Sorry. I just thought of that.
No, it really works. And that also brought up another completely random thought off of that. The fact that didn't they allude to the fact that Ned could do magic in this episode from the fact that he can bring back people from the dead. And that's how he relates to his twin brothers and his father, because he does his own form of magic, even though he doesn't like to admit that he does. Because if they didn't, then that should have been referenced, because it seems really evident to me now.
Well, I think they like directly address it when he brings back the Great Harmon from the dead.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it's a magic trick. And
right.
Then when he's like, make sure you do it with it. But he's like, now you see me.
Right.
And then he kills him again.
Right. Well, I don't know how the Great Harmon was talking during that scene, because if you have cement all around your body, I don't know, like, isn't there, like, cement that filled up, you know, a lot of your orifices, we could say, and you're probably stuck, you can't breathe or move, and I just don't know how talking would actually operate.
Science.
Yeah, science opportunities. We decided that Ned committed all of global warming in the last episode. You missed it.
Yeah, we did. We accused Ned of global warming.
Oh, yeah, so... Apparently, the show just needs to listen to Rewatchable a little bit more before it airs any more episodes or movies or plays or anything else they'd like to do.
Yeah. So I think our general consensus, though, is that we're not liking this episode too much.
Mm-mm. No. Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo. Yeah. And yet, I'm looking at the favorite scenes list. I put down that the murderer chase was my favorite. And
You're just like Christine. Like, the last episode, she chose that her favorite quote was shivering while you pee. You're like, the murder chase. Yeah, Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, and I wrote, like, I'm like, Scooby-Doo, anyone? But then I like, as we were hashing it out, like, when we first started this, I'm like, I do not enjoy this at all.
I think we've tainted your mind. You probably loved it before we got to you.
No, you know what I think it is? I think it's because I put it down as my favorite scene because it was, like, a launching point for conversation. I was like, I think it was Olive's outfit when they were, like, you know, she got out of the room and, like, the twins ran by holding the metal detectors. And I was like, I saw her outfit and she was, like, so, like, Daphne. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, this is so, like, oh that God, scene so right. just stuck out
Daphne
so much.
Daphne is just such a 70s name already. I didn't realize it until you said it, but I've never heard, I've never known a single person ever to be named Daphne or Velma.
I don't think I have either.
Right? They're, like, just as good as you.
And I'm thinking about that too much. But like anyway, I'm just going to stick with it as my favorite scene. Oh, do we want to talk about real... I know I jumped. But do we want to talk about Dwight anymore? Because he...
because he opened the grave and saw...
He opened the grave.
Yeah, because apparently people in the show, including 4-year-old Olive, are able to dig holes to China and back in no time.
I did pause the episode, like, when it had ended. I hit pause before the credits came up, and it was, like, at a moment when the lightning was striking, and it lit up, like, the whole cemetery. That cemetery has to be the size of a county, like, in a state. It is huge. Like, I mean, I
had to find that, too.
You want to... Oh, yeah, like, you had to find the great... And, like, tons of people have been buried next to Chuck. Since her death.
Yeah. And
like, she's
thing.
Right in the middle.
No, here's the thing, though. Like, I was thinking about this. That graveyard was built right next to a river, and a lot of erosion is going to take place near a river. That's the worst place ever to build a graveyard, because a lot of the coffins are going to erode through the soil and then go into the river
and just start floating.
Yeah. So Chuck's probably isn't there, because I'm sure that there's an erosion down toward that river. You know, like, that cemetery is probably on a little bit of a hill. And that's really just funny that they made us believe that, oh yeah, Chuck's grave is empty and hers just happened to be where the tombstone still was. Probably not. I mean, it hasn't been that long, but still, I don't know.
Yeah, well, their visual graphics department did a poor job of depicting where her grave was.
Yeah, I know.
In this episode.
Where the concept artists were just like, yeah, our river looks really nice and dramatic.
Yeah, right? Let's get some blue in there.
But there's one thing that's been staring me in the face in the dock the whole time.
Yes.
Christine wrote, was anyone else grossed out by the footage of sperm? I don't even know what that was supposed to be in reference to anymore. But yes, I was very creeped out by the footage of that sperm.
Sorry about, like, things I put in the dock.
No. Like, what was that from anymore? I don't remember.
It was, like, they were talking about how Lily was Chuck's mother. And they, like, just had that.
Why? Like, that's so random.
It was like, I was like, this is so weird.
It's so unnecessary.
Yeah. I don't know why I also put that underneath about the pocket watch. But
yeah, I was like, where's the relevance with this one? I don't know.
I had to go somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Other than just like a whole block of a point was just like, what's up with the sperm, guys?
Yeah, it reminded me of, have you ever seen the movie with Kirstie Alley and John Travolta, Look Who's Talking?
Oh my God, yeah.
The whole opening sequence is like the sperm like going through and they're like, yeah, woohoo, what's going on? And they're like congratulating
that.
The other one on like knocking up the egg.
See, the thing is, like, I've seen that movie since I was like 5. I'm surprised.
Oh, it was just on not too long ago, like a double feature. Look Who's Talking and Look Who's Talking Now. Oh,
I just
so
remember
good.
Like when she's like, dude, the baby girl's doing her makeup, she eats the makeup brush.
Yes. And then, like, the animals also talk. It's a little weird in the second one, but that's
yeah, okay. I don't know. I feel like that's actually an oddly appropriate show for Pushing Daisies. It's, like, very movie, I should say, because it's very, like, fanciful, like Pushing Daisies is. I'm surprised there aren't talking animals in Pushing Daisies.
Yeah. I think Bruce Willis is the voice of the kid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm really getting off topic.
No, really
I think Kristen
sense,
wants
though,
to say
like,
something.
Right. This little Chuck scene was
please.
Just, like, the opening
don't
to those
worry.
Movies.
I'm done.
All I was going to say is if like the sperm was like they were like talking, I think that would have been like funnier than just like this like realistic depiction.
I
yeah.
know. I mean, you always have to wonder how like their like science is able to like get a micro camera I guess, like, up in there. That's just uncomfortable. I don't really like thinking
about that. I'm not wondering about it.
Yeah, I'd rather not.
So, yeah, I thought that was a necessary, very necessary talking point, obviously.
And there's always a lot of really good lighting, too. Okay, I'm going to stop right there.
Good lighting. Like, they had time to, like, go in there and set up a lamp.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Pre-production took care of that.
I know. It's like, it's not CGI, I'll give you that much. I don't know. Creepy. It's weird. It creeps me out.
All right, did we want to get to our favorites?
I'm still pretty disturbed. Go ahead, yes.
Yeah, it works.
All right, well, I said that mine was the murder, but now I'm not so sure anymore. I'm questioning my whole existence here. That had been your favorite. Yeah.
I guess my favorite, now I'm kind of thinking of it, I didn't really like much about this episode, so it was a struggle. But I did actually like when Ned was sitting down talking with his brothers, and now people are going to think I'm so weird, and they were kind of talking about his, like, shared acid reflux and, like, his brother's bladder control issues. I thought that was a really nice, like, bonding moment for them.
I'm pretty sure mine is, like, the same thing as yours, just in, like, a different point in time in the episode. But Ned serves pies to the twins to, like, show that he loves them or something at one point.
Yeah, I just felt like it was, like, he kind of, despite him taking, like, 3 steps back in this other aspect of his life, it seemed like he was kind of growing up and willing to, like, accept his past or, like, his future with his family a little better.
Right. Yeah, I enjoyed him, especially when he's, like, the twins are sitting outside right after the Great Armand dies, and he's sort of just like, I'm going to kick their ass. Like, yeah. I think that's what he says to them. And I thought that that moment was kind of cute. So, favorite lines. My favorite line happened between Dwight and Lily when they're talking on the couch, and Dwight's trying to, like, say, like, oh, I knew you two, like, when you were performing as mermaids, and he says, you were mackerels, I remember, because I used to say, and Lily cuts him off and says, holy mackerel, yeah, I could hear that one coming from around the corner, it was wearing tap shoes. I just love her snarkiness.
She's very snarky. I thought he was saying, you were wearing mackerels, not you were mackerels. Like, I thought he was making, like, a sexual pass at Vivian by saying, like, I liked you and your mackerel bra.
Yeah, because he was really creepy.
Yeah.
In that whole scene.
He did go on a date with Vivian, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which is random, too. Dwight is just a random character. I've conceded defeat with trying to understand what he's doing. I don't think I'm supposed to be able to know.
Yeah, and he's another one, because this episode, again, I was really, really bored. I IMDb'd him, and he's, like, a great voice actor. Like, every show you could think of, like, he's probably done the voice on it. Hmm. So,
interesting. Like what?
He's been on Legend of Korra. I don't know the character. He's done American Dad. He's done Family Guy. American and Cleveland Show. So he's on, like, a lot of those type of, I guess Seth MacFarlane employs him.
He was in Finding Nemo.
Yes, he was in Finding Nemo.
Who was he in Finding Nemo?
He's probably in the Aquarium. I'm still looking. I just, like, saw the picture on his, like, IMDb page.
If I had a guess, I'd say he was, like, the big puffer fish. No, that's not right. No, maybe he was a...
Bubbles.
He's Bubbles?
Hmm.
So kind of like spazzy and stuff. I don't know what Dwight sounds like anymore. I can't think of him in this episode.
He sounds creepy and not like Bubbles.
Yeah, that's weird. Interesting.
Christine, what was your favorite line? Oh.
Mine was actually, Brittany, you were just talking about this, when right after the Great Hermana died and Ned was saying... says, the Great Armand will be avenged. I don't mean vigilante justice, because that... Oh my gosh, can I start over?
Of course.
Thanks. Ned says, the Great Armand will be avenged. I don't mean vigilante justice, because what kind of example would that be? I mean regular go-to-jail-for-your-crimes justice. I like that he's kind of like being this little dad figure here. I'm pretty into it.
Yeah, and he's realizing, like, that they're, even though this guy was, like, a jerk to him, the Herman guy, like, bothered, not a jerk, but, like, kind of hit him in a place where he didn't want to visit, he realizes what he meant to these two kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Oh, Mitch.
Oh, right. So, yeah, my line was when Emerson's talking about not wanting to do this Scooby-Doo case, of which I agree. And then Olive says back to when Emerson snarks, "I want to help investigate dead bunnies and missing putties."
That was pretty good.
Thanks. Yeah, that was good.
I've been watching a lot of Kristen Chenoweth lately.
Yeah, so that's a wrap on episode 5 and episode 6. If you have any commentary on Twilight relationships or, you know, Justin Bieber or the actual content of the show, Pushing Daisies, let us know on Twitter @re_watchable or, you know, leave us some iTunes reviews. We don't really have any. We made some fools of ourselves lately, so, you know, go for it. Tell me how bad my Emerson, rank my Emerson impression on iTunes. I'll take that.
We give them incentives. We have to think of a really good incentive for them to come in. So we could tell them that we will, I mean, we could even do something like, we won't do something bad to them if they do it. So it's kind of like a threat. We can say we won't draw on large man brows onto them if they write an iTunes review.
Yes. We'll make them a part of the Ned family.
But no, we won't draw on man brows.
Oh, we won't draw on.
We'll not draw on hideous man brows. You'll be normally browed.
Oh yeah, no, that's better.
Yeah, I don't know if people would want those kind of eyebrows personally, but
I was being nicer. The
Jonas Brothers brows. Ugh.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Separated at birth.
The Robert Pattinson brows. Oh god.
No wonder he was
in Twilight mode.
You put yourself in that Twilight mode.
You did. But we do have some listener feedback from last week. So last week, Shelly at Shelly Bookworm. Oh, that's cute. So just in case you want to let your listeners know, both seasons of Pushing Daisies are expiring from Amazon Prime in 25 days. Now, we are very bad at math here on Rewatchable, and this was said on May 25th. So we're just going to go ahead and guesstimate and say that within 2 weeks, these episodes will not be available on Prime anymore. So it almost lines up with the rest of the podcast. But watch the finale and maybe the last like 3 episodes a little bit ahead of time if you choose to watch Pushing Daisies through Amazon Prime. And we have another Twitter comment that Christine is going to read.
This one is from Jody at Jodester112. And she says, is this in response to what's in quotes?
Yeah, it was in response to our last episode being, released.
She said, "Oh my god, I love that show," in response to "Bakers are sexy," and we agree, in case you couldn't tell.
I mean, bakers are all right.
Lee Pace as a baker is, you know, I'll take it.
And we had one comment that is not really related, to Pushing Daisies at all, but some of this podcast wasn't, so this works. And Mitch is going to read that.
Well, oh yeah, I actually kind of agree with this comment. So it's good that you wrote in, listener, because you could have your wish fulfilled should the right stars align. But someone wrote in the last episode's hypeable post, there he was, Natura Bella. Okay, so there we go. I'm not going to even talk about why that relates to what we're doing on Pushing Daisies today.
Keep going.
They wrote, "I don't know if you guys are taking suggestions for the next show you should rewatch, but I would suggest Prison Break. It's really awesome, except for season 3, but every show has its weak seasons. Smells a lot like Veronica Mars, huh?"
Yeah, I'm the only one who's seen it. I never even rewatched season 3. I don't even count it.
Well, it's sad. I mean, I kind of like it still, but most people don't. So
no, I'm a big hater.
just because one season's bad doesn't mean we won't do it unrewatchable. That's what I meant to say. Naturella Bella. You have a lot of vowels in your name. It's hard to pronounce it.
Well, guys, that's a wrap on tonight. We had a lot to talk about, apparently.
Indeed. That's what happens when you put Mitch in an episode, though, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's always tangential, and it has somewhat to do with what we're talking about, but mostly about Twilight. And
yeah, I've hosted a couple of episodes, too, with the both of you, and they have definitely been the longest by far. Yeah. And I enjoy them, though. I definitely enjoy them.
I had fun.
They're fun.
They're fun. And maybe if you guys are good, we'll release the first 15 minutes of our conversation before we actually started talking about Pushing Daisies.
Bonus material.
That's if our rewatchable listeners behave as if they're good.
Yeah.
If behave, not, guys. And give you interviews. I'm not sure they want to know that conversation. It was...
It was interesting.
It was out there.
All right, well, we're going to go. So, I'm Brittany.
I'm Christine.
Mitch. Oh, I didn't look to see who was next. Okay.
Not even following the rules.
I was scrolling. As I said it, I was like, oh, God, I hope I'm right. I hope I'm right.
Jeez Louise, Mitch. Jeez Louise.
She's Christine and I'm Mitch.
See ya.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.